Hello and welcome to At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not-so-old. I'm Richard Davis, and I hope you'll stay with me for the next hour. Well, you may or may not have noticed, but this year's Brighton & Hove Ageing Well Festival takes place from September the 20th to October the 4th, so I can pretty confidently say that it's actually in progress at the moment. If you were listening to At Home This Morning a month ago, you'll have heard an interview about the festival, and it seems sensible to us to rebroadcast that interview, since the festival's actually going on at the moment. Following on from that, we'll be hearing from the Sue Ryder Charity, who are encouraging people to take part in sponsored walks in aid of recently deceased relatives during the month of October. Then, on a lighter note, we'll be hearing about a local company that makes and sells wooden toothbrushes, would you believe? And to finish up on an even lighter note, we'll be hearing from a cat behaviour expert on how we can find out what our cats really think about us. As usual, we'll be giving out various phone numbers, email addresses and website addresses during the course of the programme, so you may like to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can write them down. So let's get started by hearing once again about the Ageing Well Festival. Maya Davis spoke to Louise Pym, who's one of the festival organisers, and she began by asking Louise why the festival had changed its name just recently.
Well, the Ageing Well Festival was kind of rebranded when the Ageing Well service was established. So for 4 years it was the Older People's Festival, and then when we launched the Ageing Well service in Brighton and Hove, we rebranded the festival the Ageing Well Festival. And we just really think that Ageing Well encapsulates everything that the festival represents. So it's just about encouraging people to take part in activities that promote their general health and well-being and enabling people to age well for longer.
Right. So do you have any minimum or maximum age limit for participation?
Our Ageing Well service is for people aged 50 plus in Brighton and Hove. And the festival is very much targeted at people aged 50 plus. But also we really want to encourage people of all ages to participate. We would welcome people of any age.
Does it differ in any way from what's been happening in past years?
I think this year, for obvious reasons, it's been challenging in some ways to coordinate a festival with the ever-changing government restrictions and guidance. But we were really sure that we wanted to deliver an engaging 2 weeks, providing some opportunities for people to have fun and to connect with like-minded people and be inspired. So we've collated a mix of online and live events to ensure that people can participate safely and that they have a wide range of choice in the activities that they participate in. And we've chosen our theme of creative aging to very much kind of fit in with the recovery from COVID, because we really understand that older people have been very adversely affected by the pandemic, and we wanted to create opportunities for people to engage in creative classes and workshops to kind of aid their recovery from what's been a very challenging 18 months.
Can you give me some idea of some of the workshops and events that you're producing?
Yeah, so we're really excited this year to welcome the Theatre Royal, and they have a free drop-in workshop called Age is a Stage, and they use physical comedy. So the workshops will be around 10 minutes, and it will be a full day, so anybody can drop in and there's no charge for that. We have a lot of dance events, so regardless of your kind of ability for dance, it's just an opportunity to yeah, come and engage in some movement. So we also have music classes for Moving Sounds, and one of our partners for the Aging Well Service, Music for Connection, are doing some music workshops. The University of Brighton are holding a digital storytelling workshop. So that's just an opportunity to learn how you might tell a story through digital media. We have Dance Awareness doing a Strictly Not Strictly.
How does that work?
Strictly Not Strictly. It's a fun dance event, you know, where the there's a lack of competition, I'd say. It's more about just having fun. We have lots of cooking classes and art classes, photography. Brighton Hove buses are on board to do their open air bus tour of the city, whilst giving some information about the history of Brighton and Hove. So there's lots and lots going on. And we're really pleased that the Met College are on board and are delivering a whole series of events. So, yeah, we're just really encouraging people to, yeah, have a look at the programme, because there's such a wide range of things to participate in. And some and many of them are free.
Can I just ask whether you have earmarked any events as being particularly suitable for people either with dementia or caring for people with dementia or other disabilities?
Our Aging Well Service is always inclusive of people living with dementia, and we know from delivering groups and activities that the creative arts can be extremely effective for people living with dementia. So one of our partners, Music for Connection, who deliver workshops for people specifically living with dementia using music and movement, they have a workshop, and also our other partner, Brighton and Hove Food Partnership, they will be delivering their gardening session, which is tailored. They deliver sessions tailored for people living with dementia. But that is something that Aging Well as a Service has now taken on board, and we are delivering a programme of activities and services specifically for people living with dementia. So I do encourage people to give us a call if they're looking to engage in specific activities. Our partner in Munich are coordinating alongside Brighton and Hove an audio dance event. So that's taking place on the day of the International Day for Older People, the 1st of October. And it will be a dance lesson led using earphones. So everybody will have their own set of earphones, and somebody will kind of talk them through the dance, and that will be down on Hove Lawns. And Munich will be doing the same dance at the same time, and there will be screens. So the dance will be live streamed. It will just be a really good opportunity for us to connect with Munich, especially during this time when travel is limited.
That sounds really exciting. Is there anything that involves local people actually presenting or organising events, say singing or acting, without any support from professional organisations?
So there's a lot of small community-based organisations who are facilitating events alongside the kind of bigger, more established creative agency. So it's a real mix. It's been in the making for about 6 months, this festival, but we ensure that we approach all manner of different sized organisations and make it as accessible as possible.
That sounds really exciting and really interesting. You've mentioned this organisation Aging Well on several occasions. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and who makes it up?
Aging Well is a programme of activities and services for anybody aged 50 plus living in Brighton and Hove. And it was launched in 2019. And it's a partnership service. So it's made up of 10 local organisations, community and voluntary organisations, and each delivering services, activities and groups which reflect their specialism. So, for example, we have Age UK delivering an information and advice service. We have Switchboard delivering groups and activities for members of the LGBTQ community. We have the community development groups working within their established areas. So Hangleton and Knoll Project delivering a range of activities and groups. Trust for Developing Communities doing the same in the east of Brighton. And we also have a single point of contact service that's led by Impact Initiatives, who are the lead provider of the Ageing Well service, who I work for. And a single point of contact service is really just the gateway into Ageing Well. So anybody who wanted to find out about what was available to them in Brighton and Hove, whether they wanted to join a social group or access a music class, or perhaps they're looking for advice about access to benefits, then they can call this one single point of contact phone number or send us an email, and one of our advisors will talk through their needs and their wishes and link them up with appropriate services. So it's really to make accessing services much more straightforward for people. And it's really the ethos of Ageing Well is about encouraging well-being and improving health and ensuring that people have opportunities to age well whilst living in the city.
What is the phone number to contact you for information about Ageing Well as an organisation?
At the moment, due to the pandemic and having to change the way that we worked, we have a mobile number, which is the single point of contact service number, which is 07770061072. And of course, if anybody needs us to call them back, we will do that. But we are open Monday to Friday, 9 till 5. If you're unsure about anything, then just give us a call. Our advisors are extremely friendly and knowledgeable about what's available in the city.
And how do people find out more about the festival? For example, how long does it run for? What are the start and finish dates? And how do you book for events?
So the festival runs from Monday the 20th of September through to Monday the 4th of October. And we will be distributing a programme widely across the city. It will also be on the Ageing Well Festival website. So www.agingwellfestival.org. And to book events, so all instructions are in the programme to book events. There's one phone number that you need to call Impact Initiatives as lead coordinator of the festival. We manage all the bookings so that it's really kind of straightforward for people. And we can also, you know, answer any questions and provide any further information that people are looking for.
That sounds really good. Thank you very much for that, Louise.
Thank you.
Maya Davis was talking to Louise Paime of the Ageing Well Festival.
This is Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, DAB Digital Radio, and online at www.radioreverb.com.
Well, this seems to be a particularly good time of the year for festivals in Brighton featuring older people, because there's another one going on at the present, which is the Women Over 50 Film Festival. The brains behind it is Nulla O'Sullivan, and she's on the line now. Nulla, welcome to At Home This Morning. Could you start off by telling us briefly what the Women Over 50 Film Festival is all about?
The Women Over 50 Film Festival does what it says in the tin. We showcase and celebrate short films by and about older women. And our rule is to get a film into off, it either has to have a woman over 50 at the heart of it on screen or a woman over 50 as the writer, producer or director.
How long has the festival been running for?
We're in our 7th year now, which is really exciting. And last year, because of the pandemic, we were entirely online. And this year, we're creeping slowly back into the world. And we're going to have a week online and we're going to have one day back in our festival home depot in Lewes.
When you say online, this means that people will be able to log into the the festival website and watch the films there.
Absolutely, yes. So you can log on and you'll, for a whole week from the 25th of September to the 2nd of October, you can log in and you can watch a choice of 57 films from countries all over the world. This year, we've got films in for the first time from Iceland and Finland. We've got films in from Mexico and Lebanon and all sorts of places all around the world, showing women in all their diversity with all their exciting stories.
Is it necessary for somebody to register in order to be able to log on to the website and watch the films?
You have to buy your ticket. Or we do have concessions, and there is a possibility of a free ticket if you need any support there. But you'd need to go to the website, and it's really easy and super manageable and very user friendly. So we're on a dedicated film festival online website that's called Eventive. So our address for the festival is woff21.eventive.org. But you can also, we'll also have signposts on our own website, which is woff.co.uk. And then you're taken to the Eventive website, where you can buy a festival pass for just £25. And then you've got a choice of 57 films. And that works out at a bargain price of about 44 pence a film, which is really good value. We also have concessions. And if you need any financial support, we could help you there as well. So lots of different ways to come and see the films online, as well as in person at Depot on the 2nd of October.
Yes, the 2nd of October is going to be a special day, isn't it? Because that's when you actually can physically go to a cinema and watch the films. And there are various other things happening on that day, aren't there?
Yes, so the day that we're in Depot, which is Saturday the 2nd of October, we've got three different screenings of different short films, and they will all be films that the jury has given a prize to. So you're going to be seeing the absolute creme de la creme. And I tell you, it's a great festival this year. So to be looking at the winners is going to be really quite a fantastic experience. We've got three separate programmes of screenings. We've got a nice leisurely planned out day so that people aren't all crammed in together, as you would be usually at a festival. We understand that people might want a little bit more space around coffee breaks and so on. We've also got an awards ceremony, and we have our traditional all-female panel event. And the panel event and the awards ceremony are free, but you do have to book tickets to guarantee your place. And the tickets for the three screenings of films will be paid for tickets. And again, you can get a day festival pass. You can get individual tickets, and concessions are available too at Depot.
And Depot, that's in Lewes, isn't it?
That's right. Right next to the train station. So if you're coming in from Brighton or London or anywhere else, you come out the station and you're right there.
And how can people get more information about the festival?
Well, we're on all the usual social media places like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, where we're at WO50FF. That's WO50FF. And we're also on our own website, which is wofff.co.uk. And if you go there, you'll get links to all that's happening at the festival, where you can see, you can get a preview of the films that just cover such incredible topics like women's roles and experiences in later life and retirement, women who take up extraordinary challenges in later life, of course, family secrets, and older women's love and friendship and sexuality and desire. I mean, there's really something for everyone there.
Yes, it certainly sounds very interesting. And obviously, the festival's been very successful in previous years, and you're building on the success this time round. So, Nulla, thanks very much. Well, now to a subject which is not quite so cheerful, but unfortunately, it's something that all of us have to face up to at some point in our lives, and that is the death of a loved one. Recent research by the Sue Ryder charity comes up with the conclusion that many bereaved people have a special place that reminds them of the person that they've lost, and which they visit on a regular basis in order to help them cope with that loss. In October this year, the charity will be inviting people to take part in a series of sponsored walks in memory of friends and relatives that they've lost. To find out more about it, I spoke to James Wright, who's the head of public relations at the Sue Ryder charity, and also to Amanda Garrett, who's a fundraiser for them. I started by putting it to James that in dramas we often see a grieving relative visiting the grave of somebody that they've lost. It's a cliche of TV dramas, but does it actually happen in practice?
Yeah, we've done some research recently that shows that 70% of people have a special place which reminds them of somebody who has died. And I think it's important to say that grief is very personal and everyone approaches it differently. But yes, we find that people do find that special place where they go and maybe feel a little bit closer to somebody that they have lost. It gives them that opportunity to talk about them and maybe prompt some stories and some memories about that person.
And do you find they quite often actually talk to the person concerned?
Well, I think that it's very personal for them, and I'm sure people do. But also, I would say, you know, you don't have to. Everybody grieves and bereaves in their own way. And if that helps you, then great. But if not, then similarly fine.
What sort of places, other than the grave, do the people treat as special places?
We had a bit of a think about this the other day, but certainly graves came up as quite high up that list as a real place to feel close to somebody. But their favourite park, perhaps the park that they used to walk around, or the countryside, maybe somewhere where their ashes were scattered, a sports ground perhaps could feature. My family, we always remember my father-in-law by going back to his favourite pub, which is a place in Hartford, which is quite a nice place to go to remember him.
And a good excuse for a drink as well.
Well, exactly. That's just a coincidence, of course, but yes.
I suppose there can be problems when no such special place is available.
Yeah, and I think over the past year or 18 months, we have found that people have been doing things more virtually. Funerals, for example, there have been restrictions on the number of people that can go to those. So a lot of the care and support that we've provided around bereavement has made a shift online. So we do offer things like video counselling and peer support, and that's certainly shifted, as a lot of things have over this past 18 months, to more of an online offering.
So you provide a fair bit of support to bereaved people?
Yeah, that's part of what we do. And then at Sue Riding, we provide expert and compassionate palliative, neurological, and, as we say, bereavement support for people when they need it most. So the other side of that, of course, is the last few weeks of somebody's life. And our nurses can provide that more technical care for people, and allows families to spend more quality time together, so them to really focus on love, and allow us to take the kind of technical side of things away. And we do that in our care centres around the country, but increasingly in people's homes as well. So depending on their choice about where they would prefer to be cared.
And how do people contact you if they would like that sort of service?
Through the website is a good place to start, so suerider.org. And if it's coping with grief, which we have a lot of at the moment in the country after the past year, we have lots of online resources, information and advice there. There's our online community where you can talk to other people who are maybe experiencing some of the same things that you are, and the online bereavement counselling as well.
Now, I noticed that in October you have two specific dates and locations for people going on walks to celebrate deceased relatives, one of which is in Bedford on October the 10th and the other is in Peterborough on October the 24th. Why did you come up with those particular dates and locations?
Yes, so that's two of the places where we're offering our own walks. Yes, Bedford and Peterborough are where two of our care centres are. We also have two evening events. So those two are happening during the day, and then there are two evening events, one in Bradford and one in Cheltenham on the 9th and 16th, respectively. And they're part of our Walk to Remember programme throughout October. We chose those locations because they are near our care centres and the dates, simply to pick them throughout the month and to get people along. But really, we're asking people to sign up to walk in memory of a loved one and encouraging people also to find their own routes, because we know that won't suit everybody. So find a place which is special to them, as we've touched on before, that maybe reminds them of that loved one, and find a route that also suits them, perhaps ending in a pub. And around five to 10K would be about, you know, a good sort of distance. Autumn feels like a lovely time to be out exploring before the weather turns cold, and maybe turning that into a really positive event and fundraising whilst doing so.
So you're encouraging people to do this during October, but presumably if they can't manage a date in October, then a date some other time in the year would be okay.
Absolutely. Yes, of course. I think we're focusing on October to really bring a sense of community and a feel of a group of people doing that throughout the month. But yes, we're more than happy to support people throughout the year, of course.
And you give assistance in organising the sponsored walk and sponsorship and so on.
Absolutely. Yes, there's plenty of information will be sent to people as they sign up through the website. Yeah.
OK, well, thanks very much for that, James. Sitting very quietly on the side is Amanda Garrett. You are also a fundraiser for Sue Rider, but I gather you are rather more personally involved in this sort of activity, the sponsored walks and so on.
Yes, that's right. My best friend Kath spent her final days in the Sue Rider Hospice in Thorpehall, Peterborough, a couple of years ago. And I was lucky enough to be able to spend those days with her and her family. So Sue Rider is a charity that's got a very special place in my heart. And as a result of that, I've done a lot of fundraising over the last couple of years in memory of Kath, and as a way to pay back the excellent support that the charity provided for us and for Kath in her final days. Walking is something that Kath and I used to do a lot, and over the last couple of decades. We were often out in the countryside with our binoculars and our dogs, or on the Norfolk coast, bird watching. So yeah, walking has always been really important to me, and even more so since Kath died.
And you obviously find this helps you a lot in both in remembering her and in adjusting to the loss.
Yes, that's right. I walk every day. Every walk I do, I'll remember Kath in some way or another. May that be a bird that I see that we might have shared a favourite bird, or if I get slightly lost, which we often used to do when we went walking together. We just used to call it our adventures when we ended up completely off track. But it also really helps me grieving. So being out in the countryside, in nature, in the open spaces, with the time for your brain to just wander and to mull things over quietly has been, you know, incredibly beneficial to me as part of the grieving process.
So it's an activity you would certainly recommend to other people who are in the same situation.
For sure. I mean, we all grieve differently. There is no right or wrong. But I think for me, in times of grief or bad news or a difficult situation to deal with, I feel compelled to walk, to get out in big, wide spaces and to walk. And I think it really helps many people's brains sort of processing and dealing with things which are, situations which are difficult.
And I suppose there's a companionship of other people who've been similarly affected.
Yes, several of the walks that I've done for charity, I've organised groups of Kath's friends and her husband to come along as well. So the opportunity to share memories and to laugh at those fun times that we have, again, is definitely has been a part of our grieving process. And also keeping friends together has been really difficult over these last 2 years. So the fact that we were able to find a window last October where we met in sort of groups of six and spread ourselves out, I think there was about 20 of us, you know, spread in groups that did this long walk around Northamptonshire, around the pubs that we would have drunk in with Kath in our youth. Sharing those memories, keeping her memory alive, was fantastic.
And you're presumably involved in organising this year's Peterborough Walk.
I'm certainly organising a group of friends to participate in the Peterborough Walk. Yes, our plan is to do the 10K and then go for Sunday lunch afterwards in one of the pubs that we used to drink in with Kath, one of her favourite pubs.
Well, I hope it goes very well. I hope the weather holds out for you. I'll keep my fingers crossed.
Well, thank you. But I mean, we would, Kath and I would walk in all weather. So I think she'd probably have a little chuckle somewhere if she can see us all slipping around in the mud while we're out walking.
And it might even bring back some pleasant or not so pleasant memories of your time together.
More than likely will, yes.
Okay, well, coming back to you, James, I've picked up from the publicity material that I've been sent about the two walks, the one in Bedford on October the 10th and the one in Peterborough on October the 24th. But I gather from what you say there are a lot of other walks going on throughout the country which people can take part in. Can you give me details of a few more?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have four that we're organising around the country. So Bradford and Cheltenham being the other two, in addition to those two you've mentioned. And we hope, yes, that there will be lots of walks happening around the country for groups of friends and families taking part. So whether that's supporting your friends and doing their own, like Amanda's doing with her group, or setting your own one up.
And if you want to set up a walk of your own, possibly not even during October, then the thing to do is to, once you've agreed it with a few friends, is to get in touch with Sue Ryder and you'll be able to help out with the details.
Yes, absolutely. So the easiest way to do that is to head to the web pages, which is at SueRyder.org/walk, and you can find all of the different options there to sign up.
And Ryder is spelled RYDER.
Yes, it is. Thank you very much. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much, James and Amanda, and hope everything goes well for you in October. I was talking to James Wright and Amanda Garrett from the Sue Ryder charity about the remembrance walks that they're organising in October. If you'd like to find out more, the best thing to do is to go to their website, which is www.suerider.org/walk. That's www.suerider, and Ryder is spelled RYDER.org/walk. Or you can phone them on 0808 164 4572. That's 0808 164 4572. Well, thinking about having a nice walk in the countryside, I don't know whether you, like me, are a bit concerned about the level of plastic pollution that we're producing these days. In particular, in my case, I find that I need to change my toothbrush every month. And of course, that's contributing a fair bit to the plastic pollution because the toothbrush handles can't be reused. Because of that, I was very interested looking in a shop window not long ago to see that they were selling wooden toothbrushes. I made some inquiries and I discovered that they're sold by a firm called G-Organics, which is a small company near Haywards Heath. The firm also produces organic toothpaste, mouthwash and various other tooth care products. To find out more, I tracked down their boss, Alex Rocky, and I began by asking him what gave him the idea.
So we started G-Organics in 2014, and that was on the back of me making toothpaste for my personal use, for myself. I was on a journey to reduce any toxic ingredients in my personal care and dental care. So I decided to maybe to take a little bit of initiative and make my own toothpaste formulation. At the time, I could find formulations on the internet, very simple, and that's all I needed. So I started by buying some ingredients, and then in my kitchen, actually, I started mixing ingredients together, and then friends, family then wanted to have the same toothpaste that I was making for myself. So that's the idea behind the brand. We then decided to start doing farmers markets. And for me, that was the confirmation that there was a business idea, not just a hobby. So I then created a brand after having that kind of confirmation from the consumers.
And you've managed to get your products into various stores in this area, haven't you?
Yes, yeah, so we then started to specialize in two main sort of areas, one being the organic formulations industry, if you like, or market. And then the other area which we really focus on these days is the sustainability. So we supply a lot of zero waste shops.
Has the formulation changed at all during over the years?
Not a lot. I'll be honest with you. We changed the ratios. We improved the way we make it. So there are more like specific sequences in which we make the paste. Whereas at the beginning was pretty much like trial and error. The actual range of ingredients has remained the same.
I notice your toothpaste doesn't contain fluoride. Are you opposed to putting fluoride in toothpaste?
Not really. The only issue that we had with fluoride was that we couldn't find any natural form of fluoride. So because the brand itself is founded on two promises, one, we use only organic and natural ingredients, and two, we minimize the amount of packaging we use. So for the first promise, we couldn't use any conventional fluoride. But we are currently developing a fluoride toothpaste, which is made with a natural form of fluoride. So we are not against it. We just want to do it the Georganics way, which is making sure that all the ingredients come from natural sources.
And do you have a background in chemistry?
No, I don't. We do work with formulators when we create new recipes. But I think for me, it's about making sure that the formulation is exactly in line with what the company is all about.
Now, the product that I've bought from you in the past and still am buying is the wooden toothbrushes. What gave you that idea?
Well, the idea of Georganics is to be able to offer a full range of oral care. We met this very interesting company based in Switzerland, which makes these toothbrushes. So as opposed to going and source toothbrushes from China, most of them are made in China, we decided to keep it local. So when we met this company, we knew that they were the right partners for us to make products. When you buy these products, you know that everything is made in Europe. Also, it's made according to FSC standard, which means like the forestry is well respected. We wouldn't work with any other partner that doesn't offer that kind of level of transparency.
So you don't actually make the toothbrushes yourselves. You buy them in from another company.
Yes. Toothbrushes, floss and electric toothbrush are three products that we don't manufacture because it requires a different kind of type of manufacturing.
I should imagine they're rather more expensive to make them than plastic toothbrushes. I know you're selling them at the moment for £4.40 each. And, of course, you can get a plastic toothbrush for under £1. In fact, you can get several if you go to the right place. So is this a bit of a niche product?
Yes, it depends on where the consumers want to consciously spend his or her money. I think we'd like to be as transparent as possible. So there are reasons why our toothbrush are more expensive than a plastic one, like you mentioned, starting from the wood that comes from European forestry to the bristles that are made in Germany. So I think it's overall an expensive product, but it's where the consumers really can make a difference with spending their money on these products rather than going for a cheap alternative that would probably maybe support like a trade from China to the UK and maybe not very sustainably made. So that level of transparency is not as high as it would be with Georganics.
Do you think the price is likely to come down as your market expands?
Well, with everything, the bigger the brand, the more buying power we have ourselves. So if our partners in Switzerland can produce more, then we can get a better price ourselves. Whether that's this year, next year, we don't know. But yeah, definitely, that's how it works. Like, the more we can supply, the price goes down. Yeah.
You're based somewhere in Sussex, aren't you? Not far from Haywards Heath, I gather. And you've got quite a few outlets in this part of the country. Do you have outlets further afield in Britain?
Absolutely, yeah. We are not just in Britain. We supply many shops in Europe and the US. It's becoming a growing market for Georganics. But yeah, I would say within the UK, we are present in all countries in the UK.
I notice that you suggest that you, when the toothbrush is worn out, you cut the head off it and send the heads back to you. Obviously, the handles of being wood can be recycled quite easily. What do you do with the heads when you get them back?
That's a good question, Rich. With the heads, we then collect them, and then we send them off to a company in the UK called TerraCycle, which they specialize in recycling oral care components, which generally are not handled by the local council recycling bin. So we collect them in a bin ourselves, and then when our bins is full, we send them off to this company, and they do the removal of the bristles. They also remove the plaque that is inside the head, which holds the bristles together. That's made of metal. So they basically take all the components apart and recycle each of them. With the handle, like you mentioned, that's compostable, as well as the packaging. So we don't need those elements to be sent back to us.
So even though the bristles are made of plastic, they're recyclable?
They're made of nylon, and yes, they are able to send them in the recycling.
Now, you mentioned earlier on an electric toothbrush. Presumably that can't be made of wood.
It can't, no. So our electric toothbrush is made in Hong Kong. We went as eco as possible with that toothbrush. So what we've done is we've removed all packaging that is made of plastic. So when you buy the toothbrush, you know that all the packaging is paper. We also collect the heads, just like the manual toothbrush. We can collect the heads, so you can send them back to us free of charge. And then, of course, the handle, you are meant to use it years after years. I've been using my electric toothbrush for more than 3 years and never had an issue with it.
And, of course, as we were saying earlier, you produce a whole range of other tooth care products like toothpaste and that sort of thing. Yes. Where can people find out more details?
Well, for sure on our website, geoganics.com, there's an About section which has more information about why we started and what is our mission. Of course, social media is also a very good platform for us to display our values and what we're in business for, and as well as all of our campaigns, activities often run through social media.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks very much, Alex. It's been nice talking to you, and I shall keep an eye on the website. Thanks.
Thank you. Cheers.
Bye. I was talking to the founder of Geoganics, Alex Rocky. If you want to find out more, you can go to their website, which is www.georganics.com. And Georganics is spelt Georganics. Georganics. So that's www.georganics.com. You can phone them on 0330 111 2260. That's 0330 111 2260. Or you can email them at support@georganics.com. That's support@georganics.com. Okay, let's have something a little bit silly to finish the programme with. Here's Chris English to introduce it.
Have you ever wondered what your pet is thinking? If they could speak, what would their voice sound like? And what would they say? And what do you think your feline friend thinks about you? Well, the past 18 months have seen us Brits spending more and more time together with our four-legged friends. Yet, despite this, new research has revealed that 93% of cat owners are still confused by their cat's behaviour and what it means. In fact, we're a nation mystified by our moggies. Well, to explain what that's all about, we're joined by Rosie Bescovy, cat behaviourist. Good morning.
Morning, Chris.
Now, what do our pets think about us?
Well, we don't really know, do we? But that's what I spend most of my time helping owners to understand their cat's behaviour and their body language so that we understand what they really mean when they're doing certain behaviours that might seem a bit mystifying to many.
As a personal example, we have a brother and sister cat which came from a rehoming centre. They're quite elderly, probably 17, 18, and they're kept in either indoors or in a run out in the garden. But the female cat has taken to escaping. You've only got to leave the door ajar and she's out, and then won't come back in. And indeed, they won't come in apart from food and spend all their time sitting out in this run, whatever the weather.
Yeah, I mean, our domestic cats have evolved from the African wildcat, which still exists today. So we know that they, you know, they are predators. They like to explore. They like to climb. They like to, you know, have space to do lots of things and to hunt for their food, find their food. So they've still got a lot of their traits existing from, even though they've become obviously domesticated over thousands of years, they do still have a lot of those traits in common with the African wildcat.
So should we be wary of our cats?
No, I don't think we should be wary of them, but I think learning to understand their body language so that we can pick up on those more subtle signs when they're about to swipe or bite, if you don't listen to their subtle signs, can just really help cement that relationship. And we know that through the Lily's Kitchen research that 56% of cat owners said that they wanted to learn more about their cat's behaviour. So that's why we put together this campaign to help provide more information to cat owners to help boost that relationship.
And do you think cat owners misread their cat signals some of the time or most of the time?
Yeah, I think there can be that sort of clash of species misunderstanding sometimes. But again, the research showed that 38% of cat owners said that they felt that they were misreading their cat signals most of the time. So that's quite a high percentage of people that admit that they don't understand their cats. So yeah, we're just trying to make it a bit less mystifying.
And is all that purring and licking and general sort of being friendly, is it all a bit of an act on behalf of the cat?
No, I think generally when cats are happy and content, it's much more obvious to us. So purring, slow blinking, kneading with their paws, you know, when they knead on a blanket or your clothing, those are all signs that the cat is really content and happy with the interaction. And the things we might want to be looking out for is when the tail starts twitching when we're interacting with them, or if they start staring. Those would be signs that I would back off and stop touching them. And another sign is when cats roll around and show their belly, we often think that that's an invitation for a tummy rub, but that can also lead to cats swiping and biting because they're not asking for a tummy rub. They're just rolling around, transferring their scent, or sometimes it can be a bit of an invitation to play, but not for a tummy rub.
Right. So lots of mystifying things about our cats. Is there anywhere where people can get more information?
Yes, so the Lily's Kitchen website and their Instagram page will be providing more information over the coming days with infographics and lots of top tips. So the Instagram handle is Lily's Kitchen Pet Food. And yeah, you can find out more there.
And I have to ask, are you a cat lover?
Yes, I'm a huge cat lover. I've got two sisters, tabby cats. And yeah, absolutely. I've had cats all my life since the day I was born. I can't imagine living a day without having cats.
Wonderful. Rosie, thank you very much for joining us, and happy cat times.
Thank you, and you.
Chris English was talking to the cat behaviourist, Rosie Beskerby. And that brings this edition of At Home This Morning to an end. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed everything you've heard in the last hour. There'll be another edition in a fortnight's time, and that'll be presented by Chris English. And I'll be back with you in a month's time. Until then, it only remains for me, Richard Davis, on behalf of Grey Matters Productions, who make this programme for Radio Reverb, to wish you all the very best. So until we meet again, take care, and goodbye for now.